Evening, everyone. It's very good to see you all out tonight. I'm very thankful for an opportunity to stand before you and proclaim Christ's Word. God's Word is something that should be near and dear to each and every one of us. And even though Jake got the customary first lesson of trying to get you people whipped into shape for the next year, I get really reflective at the end of a year and the beginning of another. And one of the things that I think an awful lot about is if I were to stand on the Day of Judgment, how would I answer for the time that God has given me? What have I done in this life, and have I made good use of the things that He has blessed me with and the time that He's given me? So with that, tonight I want to kind of give you just a run-through of one of the two places that I go to, and I'm looking at kind of a self-check. And I can tell you that when I talk to Christians, when I talk to brothers and sisters, when you and I talk together, we say oftentimes, boy, I wish, and then fill in the blank. And so many times there are a lot of things we would wish for, but we're actually putting no effort into. So when you put wish in one hand and want in the other, at the end of the day, you'll likely be empty-handed. But the problem is that we usually don't find a way to motivate ourselves past the wishing and the wanting to get to the working. And you know, it's very interesting. I've been doing an awful lot of studying here lately about grace and mercy, right, for God. Because it's through those avenues that God has provided a way for salvation for us. So when we talk about working as Christians, we have to be careful that we're not getting into this mindset that we're going to work to earn anything. Because you understand, it's not by the works of man, right, but by the will of God that we have an opportunity for salvation. That an avenue to heaven has been provided. But yet, while we're here, we're to be a working people. We're to be a diligent people. We're to be a fruit-bearing people. And so I hope that when we look through just a few verses tonight, I want to kind of genuinely take a glance at how it might be that we stop wishing for growth as a Christian and how we might pinpoint something that we might use to grow by. And I hope that at least one of these tonight you'll be able to kind of come away with. Now, there's a mental health association. It's actually called the Mental Health Foundation. It's based out of London, England. And they do an awful lot of kind of infographic type awareness about mental health. You know, 20 years ago, if you talked about mental health, somebody would really kind of label you as someone who was, you know, an untouchable almost. You know, that person's really struggling. They're kind of crazy. They can't be trusted. Where nowadays, with things like what Devin talked about this morning with anxiety and depression and all these other kind of things working its way in, mental health isn't necessarily always a negative connotation anymore. It is something to do with the fact that we want to be healthy mentally. So it's interesting, and I'll just read you a small excerpt here. It says, it's often said, well, the title is Doing Good Does You Good. And it says, it's often said that it's better to give and receive. Of course, that's found in Acts 20 and 35, but that's not referenced here. But did you know that this is actually backed by research? While many of us feel too stressed and busy to worry about helping others, or say we'll focus on doing good deeds when we have more spare time, evidence shows that helping others is actually beneficial for your own mental health and well-being. It can help reduce stress, improve your emotional well-being, and even benefit your physical health. As part of our work to help the nation lead mentally healthy lives, we have produced this guide to show this guide that this reference the positive impact of helping others can have on your own mental health. And we have, and I am going to, I took a small list from this that I'm going to share with you here later. But this idea of altruism. Now, altruism is not a term that you might hear very often, but altruism is really the thrust of the gospel. Altruism is seeking to serve others before you serve yourself. But that's a very modern term that you'll hear when people talk about that. That's actually what they mean. And I can tell you that we have talked an awful lot in the past couple of years about finding strength and finding happiness and finding peace and finding joy. Because those things sometimes seem so elusive to us. Because it doesn't matter how hard we work or the goals that we set, it seems like we're always still depressed, or we're worn out, or we don't have the energy or the positive kind of peace and sense of comfort that we feel like we should have. And so it seems as if sometimes the harder you chase after something, the more elusive it gets. And I almost think of the guy that's running down the football field trying to catch that punted ball, right, that just keeps awkwardly rolling away from him. And he does not sure if he needs to dive for it or just keep running. Sometimes we're chasing something when we just need to stop and ask, why does it keep eluding us? And I genuinely think, and this is, you know, the world according to Jamie Helmick, I genuinely think because so many times we're too busy thinking about what we should be doing and not actually doing it. We know how good we feel when we serve other people. I wonder if we're doing that enough. You know, it's something that, and I'm going to say publicly because I hope to hold myself to it this year because I didn't last year. I would love to get a list, especially of our elderly, but of anyone in the congregation that needs work done this coming summer. And I'd love to put little work groups together. Not everybody, not all the time, but put little work groups together and actually go to each other's houses and actually help. Do. I don't care if it's rake leaves or fix roofs or mend fences. I don't care what it is, but serve one another in a very non-scriptural or non-spiritual way. Serve each other's physical needs, our logistical needs sometimes, and just share in that time together. You know, Gary brought up in our Bible study this morning about how important it is for families to work together because you deepen your relationship and your understanding of what people need and what's on their mind and the ways that you can most help. But there are so many ways that we can help each other, but sometimes we don't take time to get out of our own way and look at ways that we might need to change things. So tonight is going to be a very simple approach. It's going to be a verse-by-verse look at a part of Romans chapter 12 that talks about ways that we could grow, we could become better as Christians, and the main thrust of all of this, as you'll notice, a lot of it has to do with putting other people first. You know, we know how good that feels, and I can tell you that we know it because academically we read it and we understand it. We know that's what Jesus said. But like we've said before, you don't genuinely know the good until you actually go and do it. And then you get to experience how good that good really is. And that good, so many times, is great. So I wanted to take a look at what's a way that we could break this down. Instead of just wishing and wanting to be better, we're going to look at some verses tonight, and I want you to pick one. So if you don't already have your Bible open to Romans chapter 12, get it out, please. Get your Bible out to Romans chapter 12. We're going to go through a few of these, and we're going to do this a little bit more next Sunday night. Because I want to go through this, and I want you to pick one. And I want you, as an individual, to commit to one of these. You can commit to more. But any person who's going to talk to you about development or growth or accomplishing anything, they're going to tell you to set a small goal and accomplish that first. So please, for your own personal growth, find one of the verses that we're going to look at as we march through Romans chapter 12, this portion here. And pick one of those, and I want you to put a little star around it. Or I want you to write it out in longhand in the front of your Bible, or I was going to make some cards up, but I forgot about making the cards up, to be honest with you. I want you to think about it. I want you to put it on your fridge, whatever it takes. So the first verse we have here is Romans chapter 12 and verse 9. And like I said, we're going to go straight down through these. Let love be without dissimulation. Right? Well, if you're a King Jameser, you're used to dissimulation. If you're not, then you have no idea probably what dissimulation is. We don't use that very much. But New King and other versions are going to say hypocrisy. Right? We should know what hypocrisy is, right? Don't be fake about it. Let love be without hypocrisy or dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. So what I want to do as we walk through these, I just want to give you just a couple thoughts of things that we either need to be doing or not doing to be able to try to help us along this. So one of the things that we should probably be doing if we want to accomplish this is be brave enough to love people genuinely. And that's not just something we say and move on. Because when we love someone genuinely, sometimes that gets a little uncomfortable, doesn't it? Because that means if I really care about someone in the depth of my heart, like Paul said, remember those that are bound as if you were bound with them. Remember? If I'm going to love without hypocrisy, then it's got to be the most genuine love I can muster. So that means that when you love someone to that extent, that you're really willing to commit to trying to be of help to them. in the good and fun and shiny times when everything's going well, and in the messy and ugly times when maybe somebody feels like their life is falling apart. And that's one of the things we can be doing. Be willing to call sin out. You know, you really want to love someone without hypocrisy? And when we gather up and we shine up and dress up and we talk about how bad sin is and how it's going to keep us out of heaven, then if you want to not be a hypocrite when you're talking about that kind of love, when you see that sin in my life, you call me out on it. Please. When you see me doing something you know I shouldn't be doing, call me out on it. Please do it out of love. But even if you have to do it without love, my soul is important enough, I want you to call me out on it. And I hope you're brave enough to admit that too, because that's how love becomes without hypocrisy. Is that it's real. And that's something that some of us could probably use to improve on this year. What can we quit? What are some things we need to get away from if we're going to try to do this? Well, we can quit gossip, right? Because that's what kind of leads to this hypocritical love. You know, Heidi and I were just joking the other day about that whole Southern rule. Like, you can say bless your heart and then just tear someone apart if you're from the South. Bless their heart, I hate their guts. But bless their heart. You know, that kind of thing. You have these bookends that you want to say, and then you're actually saying things hurtful. But getting away from this habit of talking about people. And in that same respect, maybe try to lean out your relationships with people that tempt you to do that. Right? Because maybe by yourself or with certain people, that's not a temptation for you. But maybe with other people it is. Because, I mean, I can remember people that I worked with saying, what's the latest gossip? What's the good news? What, you got any dirt on anybody over the weekend kind of thing? The old, we might call it water cooler talk if you worked in an office or something. That kind of stuff does usually not breed very much goodwill. So that's what we have to do. We have to stop putting on a show. Putting on some kind of fake face. If we're going to be true with people, if we're going to abhor that which is evil, if we're going to cleave to that which is good, you've got to be willing to make changes. Even with the people that you have relationships with. And you know, you may have been thinking about that. We've talked an awful lot about it. We talk about it often. But have you done it? Have you looked at it sincerely enough and say, you know what, I have done that, Jamie. And it's been hard, but I bet it's been helpful. But you know, there might be a need where you need to keep doing that, right? Because the influences in our life come and go all the time, don't they? You know, we might finally get rid of a pretty negative influence in our life and two more show back up. You know, that could be the reality. But we want to try to figure out, is this our target for this year? Is this the one goal we're going to set and we're going to leave on our mirror and we're going to look at every morning when we're brushing our teeth? And we're going to remember that this is what we're going to work on. But if this one doesn't suit, let's try number 10. Romans 12 and 10 says, be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. You know, for a lot of you, this comes very easy. But you know, and I'm thankful that I can relate to people fairly easy, I feel. But I can also respect the fact that there are some people that can't. And I get that you're just not ready to just throw your arms open and say, hey everybody, you know, let's all be friends. I get that, but this is, and in my scriptures, in my one study Bible, it says marks of a true Christian, right? So I'm not a big fan of all the headings that they throw around in your Bibles. But you know, these are some things that Christ would be able to look at you doing and say, yeah, there's one of mine. And one of those things we could be doing is be kindly affectionate to one another. So what do we do? What are some things we can do here? Find three ways to show brotherly love. Now, we might all define that a little bit differently, but I want you to think about that. If this is going to be your target this year, I want you to find three ways to show love to somebody. I want you to try it. I want you to take some time and pray over the fact of what it really means to prefer one another. You know, you might actually be sitting there tonight realizing the fact that you can't wait to get out of here when this is all over. Because these people don't feel like your friends. They don't feel like your family. And that's sad if that's true. But I know there's got to be, at least at times, the feeling that might well up inside us. That's the devil trying to divide us and trying to pull us apart. Because he knows a church family that's strong and works together and loves one another is a force to be reckoned with. But as long as he can slither in and around all of our hearts and minds, working and pulling, finding these little criticisms and critiques, He's winning. Because the more He weaves and the more distance He creates, the more distant we feel. And New American Standard kind of phrases that latter part there, give preference to one another in honor. Do you do a good job in honoring your brothers and sisters? Are you more like the latter when you're in the gossip group? I don't know. You know. You need to be honest. I need to be honest with myself and figure out which one of these do I really need to pinpoint this year, because it's really tripping me up. And we know what the Scriptures talk about when it says causing others to stumble. So we want to be careful. We want to be reflective and say, is this something that I need to look at? What do we quit doing? We quit talking poorly about our Christian brothers and sisters. Whether it's after the assembly, whether it's in your car ride home or at your house or at your work, whatever that is. When we're most tempted to talk poorly about our brothers and sisters and when we don't get what we want. Right? When you're praised, you know what? That was a great idea, Jeff. I'm really glad you thought of that. I'm all in. Let's do this. And you know, the car ride home, boy, you know what, Jeff and I had a great talk today. And I'm really excited about the direction we're going. I hope that's the conversations we're having. Because, you know, sometimes Jeff step on my toes. You know, I don't know who he thinks he is. Who are you talking about, Daddy? Jeff Lewis. That's who I'm talking about. I'm sick and tired of the way he's always trying to get in our business and do things. This is all hypothetical, folks. Jeff's a good guy and I love him. But he's a resilient man, so I can pick him out. Sorry, Jeff. Should have warned you ahead of time. But you get the picture, right? When we don't get what we want, that's when we have a temptation, right, to not love each other brotherly. We're not honoring one another. When that should be the trigger in our mind, whoop, 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 red flag. This is when I got to put my eye of faith on. This is when I've really got to filter what I'm saying. Because my heart is probably out of check. You know, and I can't remember who it was, maybe Casey, that talked about the distance between the two being so short sometimes, and we don't always think about what we're saying. But you know, is this our target for this year? Is this where we really need to spend our time working on being kindly affectionate to one another in brotherly love? Preferring one another, honoring one another. I hope that is something that's readily in our toolbox, if you will, of things that we're working on. But if it's not, be reminded. Right? This is one of the areas that we certainly could choose as our target this year. If not number 10, maybe number 11. Verse 11, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. So here, what do we do? Well, one of the things we can do is renew a sense of urgency with everything that you do. You know, I never remember or never forget. It wasn't me he was talking to, but I swear he was yelling straight in my ear. And I was hustling as best I could, but we were in basic training. And this drill sergeant got up behind me with the voice of what sounded like 10,000 people, said, "Move like you have a purpose." And I'll never forget that. And I thought, I'm moving the best I can. But think of that. Move like you got somewhere to go. Move like you got something to do. Don't just drag along. It says, not slothful in business. Don't be dragging around when you're doing something. Weirdest thing in the world ever happened to me. I had just become a Christian. And I was to meet someone that I had never known, never met, never even seen a picture of. Now, in social media days, you know, this would be unheard of, but this is before all that. And I'll never forget, this guy's name was Booker. Didn't know that. Well, that's all I knew, that he was Booker. That was his name. I didn't know if it was his nickname or his regular name. All I knew, he was going to meet me at work one day. And I'm walking down the aisle, and this voice says, "Jamie." And I turn around. And I said, "Yes." He said, "I'm Booker. Are you Jamie Helmick?" And I said, "Yes." And I said, "So you're the one I'm supposed to meet?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "How did you know my name was Jamie?" He said, "Well, I looked down there," and he said, "and you were the one guy moving the fastest." And I thought, Now, that was really, I was just trying to get to the front desk so I could take care of something. But it's interesting when you think about the mind and attitude that a Christian should have when they're doing their work. Are they the busiest? Are they the most diligent? Are they dedicated? Do they look like someone who's genuinely trying to do the best they can? You know, maybe hurrying in your job is a bad thing, right? So you wouldn't want to be the hurrier, if that's a word. But you want to make sure that you were doing that which you knew to do the best that you could do it. Be willing Well, I'm going to save that one. Be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. You know, there are a number of ways that you can serve the Lord. And so many of those ways to serve the Lord do not involve this building. But so many times that's where we put our focus. When we think about serving God, we think about the worship service. And while we are certainly serving God in our worship services, in our Bible studies, look at how much time in the New Testament is devoted to us being taught about all the workings that went on in the synagogues and in the churches. Look at how much time the New Testament spends telling us what their church services were like. And then think about how much time is spent and how many examples are given about Christians bearing fruit and serving one another, whether it's in their house, by the wayside, in the marketplace, by the river. Look at how much time is spent explaining to us what it looks like to bear fruit for the kingdom of God's sake. There are so many things we can do. I mean, just at the building, right? Just at the building, and this is a quick, easy list. Help with the teaching program. Or better yet, teach. Right? That's one of our issues we seem to struggle with. Some people want it one way, some people want it another way, and only half people want to help. Right? That shouldn't be like that. If we all recognize the fact that this is the future of our congregation, then most of us should be, all of us should be, here am I, send me. What can we do to help? And not everybody does the same thing. Mike talked about it. Everybody has a variety of different talents. But are we the kind of person that is fervent in spirit serving the Lord? This may be your target this year, if the other two or three weren't. But yet, attend the special studies, right? We've got the men's study. We've got the ladies' study. Help with a website. Help with a bulletin. Participate in the personal work groups. Help with the building and grounds. You know, those are just a little list. There's so many that I've left out, but, you know, even above and beyond that, that article that I was referring to that we read in the beginning, it talked about random acts of kindness. You've heard that phrase before. Well, let me tell you, if I can get this thing to work here. That's my cell phone number and that's my email address. It's posted on every single bulletin that's ever been printed by me. And I've printed a few. You want a list, if you want a copy of that list, and it's a decent list, of those random acts of kindness, you either text me, I don't care if you do it right now, because it's less than applicable, although I'll watch the teenagers if they have their cell phones on. Text me or email me if you want that list. And I'll gladly send it to you tonight before I go to bed. A list of all these different random ways that we can just show kindness to one another. That we can serve one another. That we can be busy in unplanned, spontaneous moments to create a spirit of giving, a spirit of love for one another, for perfect strangers. And just in case you forgot which list you were on, personal work group 1, we're off the hook tonight, guys. Work group 2 is meeting. But is your name on there? And if it is, did you know? Wait a minute, did I hit that already? I did, sorry. Let me give you some time to read just in case. Right, so just take a quick look at the list. And I'm not, you know, it's just information. You know, we did this so long ago, it might have been the fact that, hey, you know what, I kind of forgot which group I was in. I didn't really want to ask, so I didn't really go. And so it's good to find out. Now, I will tell you, okay, they're not here tonight. So Jeremy and Jesse Hall are the new ones on the list. We kind of, if you notice, it's kind of obvious we just split it based on kind of last name and alphabetical. But this list too. But again, just one of the ways, right, that we can try to get a little bit more. And let me get back here real quick. Ooh, that's too many. Fervent in spirit. Is this your target this year? It can be. And if it should be, then make this yours. This is, you know, every one of these we all could work on. But I want you to try to figure out, I want you to try to think about where it is that you're lacking the most. Only you know that. And it's way better for you to come up with that than for someone to say, hey, Rick, you know what I think you're lacking the most? You know, that's not the best conversation. But when we're honest with ourselves, because we always play to our strengths, don't we? And has anyone ever told you that usually your greatest weakness is actually your greatest strength because you rely on it too much and you don't give enough attention to the other strengths or weaknesses that you might have? So think about those things. But number 12, as we move along, or verse 12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. So what do we do? What are some things we do? We remind ourselves of all there is to hope for as a child of God. You know, in hope is life. And hope is light. And I can tell you with all the different, you know, studies and information and seminars that you go through, when you're talking about people that have either committed suicide or what led to suicide or what led to self-harm or what led to all these other condemning type behaviors, is a very weak sense of hope. And when you think about all the struggles that you have in this life, sometimes that hope, that's kind of distant. But let me tell you, and I remind you, because it's one of the most beautiful verses we have in the New Testament. But it's 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9. And it says, "But it is written, eye has not seen nor ear heard, neither has entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love Him." That's kind of a lesson in itself. How can you read that verse of Scripture and not be completely in love with the Lord? How can you genuinely seek to serve someone half-heartedly, or worse, serve Him not at all, when you realize what God has prepared from the foundations of the world for the people that love Him and serve Him? That is what we could rejoice in. What else could we be doing? We bear our trials patiently. It says, continuing instant in prayer. You know, that's kind of funny, but if you look at my schedule, I schedule a lot of things. I schedule some things that I know I do every day or every week. They're still in my schedule. Why? Why write them down, Jamie, if you know you're going to do them every day? Well, because it helps hold me accountable to make sure that I do them. And I'm telling you right now, if you're that busy that you have to schedule things like that, then schedule some time to pray. I don't care. I don't care what it takes. Make sure that you pray. And here's a litmus test for our prayer. When you pray for someone, how do you feel when you're done? Whether it's behind the wheel of your car, or it's at your desk at work, or on your knees beside your bed, or against your couch, or whatever it is where you're praying, where you're earnestly praying. First, I guess the question is do I do that? Which if you don't, maybe that's a place you could start, right? Fervent in prayer, instant in prayer. Maybe I just need to bolster my prayer life. But when you do pray, if you're that far and you're actively praying, do you feel like when you get up that you've done your duty? You feel like that's your responsibility? That's what I do. I pray. Or maybe you get up and say, well, that's all I can do is pray, so that's what I do. Or let me ask you this. When you actually go help someone with something, when you either help someone go shopping or carrying their groceries or you help them build a deck or you help them clean a car, whenever you physically help someone and you're driving home, you know how good you feel when you've helped someone? Right? Because we talked about it. It's better to give than to receive. You know how good you feel when you've helped someone. Do we feel like that after we've prayed? Because see, if we don't, then that means that maybe we're losing fact of the power that prayer has. Because if I genuinely believe what God tells me that prayer does, then I ought to feel pretty good that I've done an awful lot for someone when I've been praying for them. That's a good check. Ask yourself, when you're done, how do I feel when I've prayed? What do we need to quit doing? We need to quit feeling hopeless. Now, I'll interject here. If you're a child of God, I get that hopelessness comes. I get that trials come. And I'm not mocking that or making light of that in any way.
because those feelings of hopelessness come. But those are the times that we take a step back and we plant our feet and we remember as a child of God all that we have to be hopeful for. Because in the here and now, it's easy to feel hopeless sometimes. But we have to remember that there's so much more to hope for. However, if you're not a child of God, you've not become obedient to the gospel. As hard as it is for me to say this, you have no hope. Yet. Why do you think the Gentiles wanted to hear the message of Christ so badly? Because it gave them hope. And there are people that we know that have either left God or have yet to come to God, that for some reason are comfortable there. And I hope that we're busy praying that that comfort quickly fades away and they realize how desperately they need Christ in their life and that hope of heaven. But that's what we will do. We will pray to that end. We need to stop personalizing our trials. You know, there are a lot of times where people say, why is this always happening to me? Why? What about me, God? What did I do that's so wrong that you got your thumb on me? You know what we've lost sight of there? We've lost sight of all the power and strength that comes through trial. Right? We're not guaranteed that this life will be easy, that this life will be pleasant, that this life will be fun. But we're guaranteed that if we bear through the trials of this life patiently and faithfully, just like we read in 2 Corinthians, that we can't even imagine the bliss of our existence when this life is over. What do we need to stop doing? We need to stop being too busy to pray. Take that time. 13. These aren't going nearly fast enough. We'll do this one and then we'll call it a night. 12 and 12. Rejoicing in hope. Oh wait, I'm sorry. 13. Distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. What are some things we need to do? We need to nurture a giving attitude. You know, and I chuckle when Gary talks about it, how sometimes it's not always easy for him to want to be a giving person. Well, I think that that's probably a lot of people's problem if they'd be willing to admit it. Because, you know, a lot of us didn't grow up with things being handed to us. We worked awfully stinking hard to have what we have, and we certainly don't want to have to give it away sometimes. But as a child of God, when you realize the blessings that come with being a giving person, with being a charitable person, we want to do that. When we realize that God loved, right? God so loved the world that He gave up what? He gave up His only begotten Son. So if God can be that giving, then I need to work on my stinginess. That's just the reality of it. You know, but I also wonder, is this the same as giving as we prospered on the first day of the week? You know, some people read this and say, well, I give. I give on Sundays. We know it's interesting because the verses that we always reference about our Sunday collection is all about giving. It's about giving, but on an individual basis, when this says rejoicing in... No, I didn't even advance that. Sorry. You guys got to give me the cue. Distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. Notice it doesn't say saving up for the distributing. It says distributing to the necessity of the saints. Are you a giving kind of person? It's not you've not just done all you need to do when you give at the contribution on Sunday. Nor do I believe it to be a scriptural thing to say, well, you know, I'm not going to give this week because I'm going to put my money to better use. I don't think that's scriptural either. We're having all kind of trouble tonight. But yet, is this something that you do readily? Is it something that you struggle with? This whole side of giving to hospitality. You know, I love these little personal tests. Like on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your hospitality? Don't say it out loud. Just how would you rate that? Like I'm a pretty hospitable person or I can't stand people. So no, I don't want them at my house. Where are you on that spectrum? Think about that. Where would you give yourself that number? Right now in your mind, give yourself a number. And then think about, like, in the last 6 months, what have I done for hospitality's sake? You know, and family only counts for half. by the way, right? Because you got to kind of have to have them anyway. So think about, like, do I have a habit of being hospitable? And what excuses do I make for not being hospitable? Right? Every one of these, one of the don'ts could be like, or one of the do's could be stop making excuses why you don't do this, right? Because we talk about that all the time. But yet, I want you to think about that. And think about this last little piece here. Don't live a life that consumes everything you have. Don't live a life that's so busy you don't have time for anybody. Don't live a life that takes all of your money so at the end of the week you have absolutely nothing. Because here's the problem is that when a need comes, sometimes the need is somebody needs money. If you're living a life that spends every dime you have, do you have anything to give to someone? Jesus said to those that stole, go your way, steal no more, but rather work that you might provide for the things you need, but that you might save up, that you might give to someone who's in need. But if we live a life that consumes every penny, we don't have anything left. Same goes for our time. And we all know how much more precious our time is than our money. You know, because sometimes somebody just needs a cup of coffee. Somebody just needs 15 minutes. But you know, if they feel like they got to drag you around the leg and or grab you around the leg and you drag them 10 feet before you stop, are they likely to kind of reach out and say, hey, Jamie, I'd like to talk with you for a little bit? Probably not. Is this our target? Do we need to work on distributing? We'll go through the rest of these here next week. But I want you to kind of bring your thoughts to a close here. And I want you to think about whether or not you're even in the right relationship with God. We're talking about growth. We're talking about trying to do those things which will make us better Christians. But you know, maybe we don't even really feel like we have that relationship anymore. Maybe we've been so distant from God, truly, genuinely distant, but we've tried to been faking it, or we've just tried to kind of like roll along until something improves. That's a dangerous mindset. If you're struggling right now in your life because you're not close to God, then I don't know what it is that you need, but you do. And I promise you that if you've been at some distance before God, a great place to start would be prayer. And we would absolutely love to pray for you tonight. And we know that it will help mend those things that are broken, help restore that lacking service, create that fervent spirit in serving the Lord that we need, desperately need. But also an opportunity to recognize the fact that if you're still outside the fold of safety, that you're not given forever. I've never been someone that, I can't say never. I guess when I was an initial Christian, I thought that would be the way to do it. Scare the pants off of people to get them to obey the gospel. That doesn't work. I mean, it might work, but it's short-lived. Because, you know, people aren't afraid for things very long when they get familiar with them. And the more they're around sin, the more they see sin, unfortunately, the more they commit sin, it loses its sting a little bit. Even for a Christian. If they don't keep their heart prepared. If they don't keep their heart tender. If they don't respect that Christ died to take care of those sins. But what should compel us above everything else is the love that God has for us. And you have to ask yourself, why am I content not having access to the most boundless source of love humankind has ever known? So it might be from a growth standpoint, that's where we start tonight, right? For you, that might be the start of your journey, that you become a child of God tonight. Or it might be that we somehow try to help and pray and encourage you to strengthen yourself to a point where you embrace looking at Romans 12. Because see, when you're weak and you're at distance, when you look at the Scriptures, you don't really focus. You don't really pull in. You're like, yeah, those are all the things I know I'm supposed to be doing. But maybe I'm not doing. Please let us help you in that if we can. Please consider Romans chapter 12. And you can read ahead. We'll hit the rest of this next Sunday night. But pick one. If you found yours tonight, great. If not, we're going to go all the way through 21. But I want you to genuinely find one small, attainable goal in Romans chapter 12. I want you to write it, physically write it, and put it on your fridge or your mirror, wherever it's going to end up. And I want you to think about, I want you to read, I want you to meditate on that verse every day. Because that's only going to take a minute or two of your day. And I know you have that much time to spare for the Lord. And I hope that at the end of 2019, if you can't remember anything that you worked on or tried to do, that old crusty, wrinkled up piece of paper will still be hanging on your mirror or your fridge. If we can help you in any way tonight, please make your wishes known while we stand, while we sing the hymn that's been selected.
Bring Christ your broken life, so marred by sin. He will create anew, make whole again. Your empty, wasted years, He will restore, and your tease, remember no more. Bring Him your every care, if great or small, whatever troubles you.